You're tuned to 90.7 KRWG Las Cruces. I'm Leora Zeitlin. This is Intermezzo. Kirsten Chavez has embodied Carmen to such a degree that she has performed the opera in more than 40 productions around the world. And Opera News reported that she was the Carmen of a lifetime, with her dark, generous mezzo, earthy eroticism, volcanic spontaneity, and smoldering charisma. Chavez has it all, including a superb command of French and a sense of humor. Kirsten Chavez is an alumna of New Mexico State University and the Eastman School of Music. She was here about 5 years ago as a singer in residence, and I got to interview her a few times then. I am thrilled to have her back in the studios of KRWG. Welcome back to Intermezzo and to Las Cruces.
Thank you so much, Leora. It's a joy to be here.
Audiences will get to hear your Carmen in a very new way this weekend with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. You have created a one-woman show of Carmen, Fire and Fate. I think you premiered it in the UK.
Yes.
Earlier this year.
Exactly.
And it's just under an hour,
yes.
Of Carmen on stage with the orchestra, and we want to hear all about it. I know that you have sung, of course, arias from Carmen on the stage before. I remember even when you were a singer in residence a few years ago, and it was steaming, and I know this performance of Carmen will be too. How did you come to want to condense the opera into a concert performance? And that seems like a pretty unique. There are orchestral arrangements of arias, but to sort of be the star on stage, making it a dramatic and orchestral piece, seems quite unique.
I think it is unique, and in a way, I'm sort of surprised that it is, because Carmen has been treated in so many different ways, you know, hip-hop and flamenco and movie versions and all sorts of things. So in a way, it's surprising that this has not been done. But the whole inspiration for that, Leora, was because I, having done Carmen a lot, having, of course, been exposed to lots of different ideas about Carmen, different productions of Carmen and versions of how to interpret her character, I have been somewhat dismayed by the tendency to portray her as a loose-moraled character, someone who sleeps around and who's kind of mean or nasty or something like that. And I never understood where that came from. I have my ideas, but more importantly, I thought, you know what? I feel like I know Carmen pretty well by this point. She's taught me a lot. We're intimate friends. And I feel like I want to set the record straight, because I simply think she's a strong woman. She's somebody who knows herself very well, who's extremely comfortable in her own skin, which to the rest of us can be extraordinarily intoxicating to see. I don't know personally what it feels like to be that comfortable in my own skin. Far from it. But when I'm Carmen, I enjoy exploring that feeling. But she's also somebody who's at the height of her powers. She's in her element. She's extremely popular in her community. She's sure of her place. She has no anxieties. You know, I mean, it's like she's at peace and really feeling the joie de vivre that we all wish we could feel. And there's something about that that is just really compelling. And so I think, I'm not sure, again, why she was interpreted as somebody not that, as somebody sort of much more base. But I would ask all of my listeners to think about the entrance of Carmen in the opera, which comes just before the Habanera. Right before that, every single person on stage, whether it be male or female, every one of them is asking, where's Carmen? We want Carmen to be here with us. Where is she? And I ask you, would that happen if she was nasty to everybody and mean and aloof and arrogant? And of course it would not. So I say there is no basis for this other version of Carmen in the source material, which is the score from Georges Bizet. And so I decided that it was time to try to set the record straight and to give my view on who Carmen is. And this show allows me a very unique opportunity to not only present her music, but to present her story with interspersed monologue, which explains my view of what she's thinking, what she's experiencing. This kind of intimate view that you would never get from seeing the opera as it is in by Georges Bizet.
So you've created text then that you're speaking in between the arias and the music.
Exactly. And it's actually a joint creation. Really, it was my director, Jonathan Pape, who originated the text for me. And then we worked on it together, tweaked it together so that it turned into something that I felt was really expressing the things that I wanted to express. So, and then we translated it. So, for example, I've done versions in Spanish. I'll be doing versions in French and maybe German if I'm asked with enough vehemence.
That is really fascinating because we see movies made about famous people and sometimes even fictional people,
right,
where it's an imagined internal view of that person.
Right.
And you've created an internal monologue of Carmen that doesn't exist in the opera but derives from it. I love that. That's very interesting. And we get to see new dimensions of her, as you say.
Right. And I think it's just so important. And I've actually just been awarded a grant to take the show to on tour in Europe and Asia. So,
no. With local orchestras in each place?
Local orchestras or a pianist. Because I will have done now both versions. This is my very first time doing it with orchestra, and it means so much to me to be doing it with the Las Cruces Symphony, my home orchestra. So,
yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Kirsten Chavez is my guest today. She's performing with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra this weekend, and just Saturday night at 7:30, Sunday at 3. You were born in Albuquerque, grew up in Malaysia, and then came here to New Mexico State to study for your undergraduate degree. So that's when you say your home orchestra. That's that's what we're talking about. And you lived here for some time during those years.
Yes.
And I know studied with Jerry Ann Ault.
Yes.
Who was the choir director here for years and years and years. So let's just give a little background of your time in Malaysia and then how when you came back to Las Cruces.
Well, my parents were being very creative. They decided to run off to something exotic, and they were looking for an international school that needed both a music teacher, my father, and an English teacher, my mother, at the same time. And the International School of Kuala Lumpur came up. They interviewed, got the gig, and off we went. And they loved it, so we stayed there for 10 years. Mm. And I graduated from high school there. So it was, as you might imagine, a very unique way to grow up. Mm-hmm. I was very much a minority, which was an interesting experience. Very much stared at, called at, honked at, every day of my life. During that time, I think it probably made me pretty self-conscious, which explains why I had to be on the stage so that I could normalize why people would stare at me. You know, I've psychoanalyzed myself over the years and come up with very interesting reasons for things.
Well, you've turned what could have been a traumatic or difficult situation in childhood into something very positive, especially for your audiences. What brought you back to Las Cruces?
Well,
it wasn't really your city.
Interestingly, I was originally thinking I would end up in Albuquerque at UNM. And I came, I guess, the summer before I graduated from high school, I came to visit UNM and I came to visit NMSU. And there was no competition. I loved the campus. I loved the faculty that I met. I was welcomed with open arms. I was able to get some wonderful scholarships. So there was really no competition. And even though Albuquerque was where I was born and I had siblings there and everything, it just didn't make any sense to be anywhere else but NMSU. And I think I made the right decision.
Then you've lived in a number of other places, and now you're back sort of in the Southwest.
I am. About a year and a half ago, I was recruited by the University of Utah in Salt Lake City to be their resident artist. So I am on the voice faculty, and in between my singing engagements, I go home to Salt Lake City and teach my kids, whip them into shape, and then I'm off again.
And touring
as a
sought after mezzo soprano.
Thank you, Yara.
Yeah. Let's just go back to Carmen for a moment. It's a mystery to me, and I'm sure you'll know more. Georges Bizet died thinking it was a complete failure.
Yes.
It is maybe one of the most popular operas.
Yes. One of the top three.
Okay.
Yes.
What happened?
Well, I think it was just shocking. You know, I mean, Georges Bizet was ahead of his time in many respects. But the subject material was, you know, we're talking grand opera. A piece presented as grand opera, which really would have been opera comique, which is why it had this combination of dialogue in the opera as well, which was not a grand opera style. But I think some of the subject material would have seemed oddly maybe a little bit vulgar or base to audiences in Paris. And, you know, I don't think it took that long after the original failure for them to go, oh, yeah, actually, this is pretty cool. It makes me crazy that he never saw that because he died 3 weeks later.
After the first performance.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's just horribly tragic. And of course, all I can think about is, geez, what else might he have written? Mm-hmm. You know, because there are many, many reasons why this particular opera is so much a staple in our everyday in 2017. You know, the music is so accessible. Everybody knows most of the tunes from Carmen, whether they mean to or not, whether they know they do or not. But also the story, when presented well, is so completely compelling. There's so much truth and realism in the characters. I can understand now why in 2017 it's even more popular than it ever has been, because we embrace this kind of realism today, you know, and we recognize it. We know that it is true and real and that it's out there, part of our everyday lives, you know. And the thing is, it's a true tragedy, because when Carmen is played really well, and of course I have strong opinions on that, when she's played really well, you can't help but empathize with her. You know that she is a strong woman, that she's capable of standing on her own two feet, and that she wants to share her life with somebody, but she's not going to be possessed by them or controlled by them. Hello, modern woman. I know this speaks to all of you. It certainly speaks to me. And I've experienced in my personal life, some of the kinds of behaviors that José demonstrates on Carmen. It's so real.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, of course, as you said at the beginning, I mean, our values have changed, our sexual mores have changed, women's roles have changed so much, and how we want to live as women look what's happening right now
in our
country. So the fact that she may have been seen as vulgar or base or, in, I don't know, reprehensible in some way in the past and isn't now is partly how history has unfolded.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
So this is a great moment for Carmen.
It's kind of funny, but yes. And I mean, for me, it's always been a great moment for Carmen, but this is particularly poignant right now, I think, you know.
Yes, yes. Every moment has been a great moment for Carmen. But we're in an interesting moment historically.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that is a component of how music is received. There are many works that were not recognized in all the arts
so true.
In the time of the
so
artist.
True.
And Beethoven said, you know, he was writing for the future generations because, you know,
amazing,
so,
right?
so there is some way in which you'll be bringing Carmen into a whole new reality.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Wonderful. Let me ask you about the choreography. Mm. I saw just a few moments of the rehearsal last night, and it is wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I'm so blessed because in addition to Jonathan Pape, my director and the writer of the text, I had an incredible flamenco dancer choreographer in New York, Sol La Argentinita, who is just a dynamo. I swear if she could sing this Carmen score, I could never compete with her because she is an absolute wonder. And she walked me through patiently, God bless her heart. We staged, choreographed four different sections of the piece. She knew that she had to be very careful with regard to, you know, if I was singing something that was particularly demanding, that I couldn't be, you know, flipping over backwards or whatever. So she was super careful about that. She understood that I have a sense of flamenco, but not necessarily the technique, because I've used the gestures and all sorts of things throughout the years, but I've never actually been trained as a flamenco dancer. So she had to build on what I had and then add new elements, more footwork into it and that sort of thing. And for the tour upcoming, my hope is that we can then expand further and add more choreography into the show.
Kirsten Chavez has been my guest today. She's got performances tomorrow night at 7:30, Sunday at 3 with the Las Cruces Symphony Orchestra. Lonnie Klein is conducting. There also will be music of Tchaikovsky and Strauss. And Carmen, do I have the right, Fire,
you know,
and Fate?
We've changed the title,
okay.
Leora. It's going to be called, well, for now it's still Carmen, Fire, and Fate for our performances this weekend. But after that, it will be called Carmen Inside Out.
Oh, well, that's even more what we were talking about,
yes.
Sort of getting into an inner,
exactly.
Inner mind of
exactly.
Carmen. Wonderful. Carmen Inside Out with the mezzo-soprano who's considered one of the definitive Carmens in the world, Kirsten Chavez. Thank you so much for coming
Thank
back.
Thank you, Leora. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
A pleasure to have you on my show.